You're listening to Let's Get Legal, hosted by John Hansen and powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. Today's show is sponsored by attorney Patrick Dolan from Conti and Dolan, attorney Michael Leonard from Leonard Trial Lawyers, and attorney Millie Palmer from Navigant Law Group. Now, here's John Hansen, and let's get legal.
At 112 on WGN, and Millie Palmer, not able to join us today, but I am super thrilled to meet her founding partner of Navigant Law. We say good afternoon and welcome to WGN for the first time, Susan Dawson. How are you doing today?
Good. Thanks for having me.
You're on a busy day. You're attending all the kids' sports activities.
Yes.
I think most parents can relate to that on a busy Saturday afternoon.
Yes, absolutely. We were poolside at 9 a.m. this morning, and now I'm rugby pitch side here at 1 in the afternoon in two different states.
Oh, the juggling act that parents go through.
Right.
So you get it. You understand it. You run this law firm, obviously, with Millie. You got a great team there as well, but a parent too. And I think you kind of understand the struggle of small business ownership, and you represent a lot of small business owners, don't you?
Yes. Yes, I do. Yes. It's an interesting juggling balance, right, between running your business and running your life, but it's also a very wonderful, stressful, but wonderful way to be. I enjoy being an entrepreneur.
You're new to this program, so I got to ask, are you from the area originally? Why did you become a lawyer? Just some of those basic questions. What inspired you to do what you do?
Well, yes, I am from, I'm born and raised in the Arlington Heights, and chose to raise my family there as well. So I've been a long time resident of the area. You know, why did I choose to be a lawyer? I don't remember ever not wanting to be a lawyer. Huh. My mom always jokes that she caught me playing lawyer in my bedroom as a very young child. Right. So I don't know why. She blames it on my uncle because he was living with us while he was attending law school. So she says it's his fault. I think it was more due to the fact that my parents always led very interesting debates at the dinner table where we had to be able to bring up, you know, cite sources and references, and we couldn't just make an argument. We had to defend the argument. So I think it was more their fault. But either way, it's what I always wanted to be, and it's what I do, and it's what I love.
I love that. Yeah, for a lot of lawyers that come on, they're like, well, I liked L.A. law, and here I am, which is a good story, too. But I love that the dinner table growing up in your house was, hey, you must defend your thoughts and cite your sources. Sounds
right.
Like a rigorous meal to go through, but one I can kind of relate to. Like, it was TVs off at our dinner table, and hey, you had to chat and make conversation even when there wasn't any to be had. And this is what I do now. I fill
right,
the airtime.
Right.
So I guess, yeah, it's all built at the dinner table for a lot of folks.
Right. And this is in the 80s and the 90s when you couldn't just pull out your phone and find a source.
Yeah,
right?
That's true. No ChatGPT in the 80s for sure.
Right. Exactly. Right.
Although ChatGPT has gotten a lot of lawyers in trouble, as we've covered on this program. We'll leave that one for another day, making sure that your court
right,
cases
exactly.
that you cite are legitimate. So, Susan, Millie comes on. She answers a bunch of questions about estate planning. And I'm sure you know a lot about that. But your area, and it does touch with estate planning, especially if you're running a business, but you handle mostly you work with employers and business owners about their plans should something happen in their business. That's kind of where your world touches the estate planning side, but then also just general business legal issues too, right?
Correct. Absolutely.
So what is something people don't think of as they're a small business owner when it comes to planning a legacy beyond themselves or even planning for what could happen in an emergency? I mean, I imagine there's a lot of small business owners out there that, in fact, the plan doesn't exist.
Right. A lot of business owners, they think about business succession planning as what am I going to do when I retire? Am I going to sell? Am I going to transition to family? Am I going to transition to my employees? What am I going to do 20, 30 years down the road? And they frequently forget about the fact that life is precious for all of us and no day is guaranteed to anyone, and anyone can be hit by a bus at any time.
Mm-hmm.
And so over 25, going on 26 years of practicing law and representing businesses, I've seen so many times an unprepared business owner where something happens to them unexpectedly and they didn't have documents in place and just – the business fails. I mean, it very frequently the business not survive the incident because there wasn't proper planning put in place. So it's something Millie and I work on together whenever if I have a business owner who wants to go through estate planning, or she has someone who comes to her just as an individual for estate planning and she discovers they own a business, we bring this component into them because it's a very different area, business ownership. Most small businesses, the primary asset, the way they feed their family and keep a roof over everyone's head is the revenue coming out of the business. If you have a life insurance policy, sure, that's great. That will protect you, absolutely. But that life insurance policy doesn't pay the day after, right? After the death, there's a process. And also, what if you're disabled? You're much more likely these days to become disabled, not deceased.
Right.
And so what if you're disabled? I've had business owners, you know, have situations where they're hospitalized for, you know, a month, 60 days, they can't run their business. And when they recover, they have nothing to come back to because the employees left, the clients left, and now they have to rebuild everything. So proper planning is very important.
So are the documents similar to just like an average person? Like, obviously, powers of attorney are for like family members or friends to help you out during crises. Are there similar sort of rules governing, you know, who does what if I'm incapacitated? Maybe powers of attorney isn't the right word. Maybe it's just documents that set a plan in motion. Walk us through like what you chat about and what tools you have in your tool chest to ensure that a business is run properly if someone's deceased or disabled.
Sure. So powers of attorney are actually very relevant to the business world, just like they are to an estate planning world. You know, if I'm going into a closing, my client might be difficult to reach during the closing. I frequently get a power of attorney to be able to sign documents on their behalf. You know, there's restrictions to what I can do. I can't change the purchase price. I can't change material aspects, but I can sign certain pre-approved documents if they're not going to be available. So I deal with powers of attorney. You know, for example, if I need to talk to the IRS, I'm not a tax attorney, but there are times that I need to talk to the IRS on behalf of a client. I have to have a power of attorney and have authority to do that. So powers of attorney are very relevant in the business world. But on top of that, there are governance documents. We have bylaws in a corporation. We have annual minutes, director's minutes in a corporation. I can put something in place that allows what I call the swinging director. I refer back to Tarzan. I'm dating myself. But, you know, something happens to you and you can have someone swing in for a period of time that can make decisions in that directorship role and then swing back. And that kind of works in conjunction with a power of attorney. Frequently, people want to give powers of attorney to a family member, someone who they trust. And you know, time after time, what I see with most of my business clients who say they had their estate plan done, and oh, they took care of my business. Oh, yep, they did business succession planning too. What I see is that power of attorney gives power over all the assets to the spouse. And in theory, that's great. Except that what I like to remind them is you've been hit by a bus. Where is your spouse at that time? Because they're only in one of two places. They're on the bus with you and therefore also incapacitated, or they're at your bedside and they're fielding medical questions. They're dealing with the kids. They're dealing with parents. They're dealing with family. They're emotionally not in a position to make decisions for your business. So you just gave power of attorney to an individual that may not have the capacity, not because they're not smart, intelligent, wonderful people, but they're emotionally compromised because of the event. But also, is it fair to them to put that burden on them when they really need to be by your bedside?
Yeah, you're bringing up a lot of...
Should they be worried about how to make payroll?
Yeah, right? Well, I was just going to say, it's like, you might think, well, you know, you give them some time, then they'll be able to do it. But given some time, you go a couple of weeks and they don't log into QuickBooks and pay the employees. Those employees right. Don't like the insecurity of not knowing what's coming next. They're going to be looking for other work. I mean, a couple weeks' time can make the difference between a business surviving or not.
Right. It really can, especially a small business that is so dependent on the owner. A couple of weeks is a lifetime, right? And it's not just your employees. The first thing employees will be very upset, but they will immediately think about themselves and wonder if they're going to have a job. There's nothing wrong with that mindset. I don't say that negatively, but it is the employee mindset. They have to worry about themselves and their mortgage and their families. So if they're not sure when you're going to come back or if the business is going to survive, they will look for a job. But similar to that, your customers, they need to know their supply chain is secure. So they will look for alternative suppliers for whether it's a service, whether it's a good, whatever it is that you're providing to them. I had a client who went through, I have a succession planning program that I do for business owners. It's called the Embark program, and it kind of helps get prepared for these types of issues. And I had a client who went through the program and has a great plan, but didn't really understand until what happened was they bring pastries every Friday into the office for their employees. Over the weekend, the bakery owner was killed in a car accident. Very, very sad, very awful. And the first thing the business owner thought when they heard the news was, oh, no, that's terrible. And the second thing they thought was, we have to find someone new to get our pastries on Friday because right. This bakery won't be able to deliver. And then they realized what they said, and they called me and went, oh, now I get it, right? Now I get it. Because, yeah, it's exactly what your customers are doing. And what you need to do is have a plan. You need to be able to say, have someone who can come in and say, not to worry, customers, business as usual, we prepared for this. Which actually, interestingly enough, that bakery, I think the client of mine said Monday or Tuesday of that week following the accident, an email went out to all of their customers that said, it's really sad, really horrible, but don't worry, we've been planning for this. We have a plan. There will be not a hiccup in your delivery schedule. And they immediately went, oh, okay, I'm good. I don't have to find a new bakery. And again, lesson learned, right? Yeah. Just that email, just that messaging, and so quickly, and knowing and being prepared for it.
Yeah.
That's a lot. Changes everything.
For sure. Yep. We got to take a quick commercial break, but Susan, we get some more questions for you. 312-981-7200 is our phone number. If you're a business owner and you're curious how this works, or you're just maybe you know someone that is a small business owner, let them know to listen. 312-981-7200. By the way, the team at Navigant Law can be reached at 847-253-8800. I'll give those numbers again before we wrap things up. Continuing our conversation here on Let's Get Legal with Susan Dawson from Navigant Law. If your Navigant Law sounds familiar, we usually chat with Millie Palmer, who does estate planning. Susan Dawson handles kind of the business side of estate planning and some other business-related things. Susan, a little later in this show, we're going to have Stephen A. Leahy on. He's a tax attorney who helps small businesses out. And he often makes this point, and I'm sure you'd echo it. A lot of people that start their small business, it's a passion project of something they love. They know how to do that thing they love. But whether it's the taxes or the governance plan, you know, they're learning on the fly, and some of these things get left behind so late that you've got to come, and I'm sure you've met business owners that have been around doing it for a while, let alone new ones that have no idea that they need to have a plan together.
Right, absolutely. You're so busy working in your business, you forget to work on your business, right? And part of working on your business is making sure of your foundational documents. It's not the sexy, fun part of working on your business, but it's absolutely important to do. And, you know, there are people out there that can help you and kind of take some of that burden off of you.
I got a dumb question. So let's say you have a pretty small business, just a few employees, a handful of employees, and but none of them would maybe be, I don't want to say good enough, they're just not there to run the business if something were to happen to you. Can you name like anybody, like maybe it's a good friend who runs another business who could step in for a few weeks to just right the ship if he or she were willing to do so? Because you mentioned like don't just hand it to your spouse necessarily because they're going to be busy dealing with whatever's happening to you. Does it have to be someone in your business, or can you develop a plan that's a little more creative and might involve other people?
Absolutely. It can be anybody that you trust to come in. That's one of the things that I talk to people about with our Embark program that we work on is, you know, you should be developing those relationships with somebody that you trust in your world that doesn't have as much of that emotional impact if something happens to you, that you would trust to come in and step in and be able to take over. And then find someone that you can agree to do that with mutually. Hey, if something happens to you, I'm happy to step in and help you. If something happens to me, you step in and help me. help me. And then you let your employees know, hey, if anything happens to me, this is, we have this plan. This is what will happen. You know, one of the things, if you have an office, you have whether you own it or lease and you have employees, every year you should be reminding them of the fire exits, right? The tornado plan, right? All these things are things employers tend not to do, but you really should do for safety of your employees. Well, you should also be reminding them of what happens if something happens to you. It might not be a death or disability event. You might have gone on vacation and your plane got canceled, your flight got canceled, True. You can't get back, you're having trouble getting connectivity and you're just not available. It doesn't have to be such a dramatic event. You should have a plan for what happens in those situations.
Well said. John Hanson here, short show today. We take you up till 2 o'clock when we get Northwestern, as you just heard Dave Bennett talking about. And we're spending most of the show today with Susan Dawson of Navigant Law. And we'll chat with Stephen A. Leahy in about 12 minutes or so, about a little bit on the tax side of things. But Susan, you do the business employment side of Navigant Law. We got some questions in from some small business owners, including one from the 773, who says that they struggle sometimes whether to classify some of their employees as hourly employees or independent contractors. And is that something your office can help him with?
That is a problem I would say a good number of businesses here in Illinois face. Most, I hear a lot people saying the phrase, my 1099 employees, which there is no such thing. You're either a 1099, which is a contractor, or you're a W-2, which is an employee. And you have to be careful even with that phrasing, because referring to someone as a 1099 employee sounds more like they're an employee. But to answer the question, in Illinois, everybody who works for you is by default an employee. A lot of people think, well, they only work for me 3 hours a week, so that's clearly not an employee. No, that's just a part-time employee. I mean, that's still the default is an employee. So you're an employee unless they fall under one of the exemptions. And I obviously don't have time to go through all the exemptions today, but really it comes down to control. Do you control when they show up, how they show up, where they show up, and what they do when they do show up, right? So if you are controlling every aspect of what they're doing, then it's irrelevant how long they work for you. They're probably going to be an employee, not an independent contractor. So this, you know, the Department of Employment Security will audit businesses and assess penalties if you're inappropriately classifying individuals. You can also get into Department of Labor issues with overtime rules and all of that. So it's really important that you are properly classifying your individuals that are performing services for you, and that you understand whether or not they fall into an exemption, if they can be a contractor, what are the rules associated with that to avoid penalties?
Yeah, I didn't even think about the penalties, let alone having to maybe reimburse an employee who was, if they were a 1099 when they should have been an employee, they were paying their own payroll taxes, essentially. You weren't, and now all of a sudden that becomes an issue, right? I mean, there's tax right. implications, there's legal implications. Getting this right from the get-go makes a difference.
Right. And what if they're not paying the appropriate amount of their taxes or withholding? What if they're not doing that? Right. So, I don't know this to be true. The state has never said this to me, but here's kind of my philosophy on that. And there's a lot fewer businesses in Illinois than there are employees. So the government would rather crack down on the business, make sure that all the withholding is getting paid, than have to go after every individual. Right. So it's just kind of a matter of a practicality.
Yeah.
They will come back and audit, and if you weren't paying, then they will assess payments to you, and you will then have to pay withholding, and there's interest and penalties and all of that associated with it. I've been through a number of Department of Employment Security audits with clients and helped them get through that. A lot of times what happens is the individual who was a contractor and knew they were a contractor and everything, you know, is fine, gets let go for, you know, maybe there just isn't work to do, or right. or the service has ended or what have you, and they file for unemployment because the average individual isn't aware of the fact that they're not entitled to unemployment. So they file for unemployment. The IDES then sends the documents out to the employer, and the employer responds with, no, they were a contractor. I've even had situations where the individual goes, oh my goodness, you're right, I was a contractor, let's drop this. Drop this claim, I shouldn't be getting unemployment. And the IDES goes, too late, and they will run an audit. as soon as they
of the business
get that. So yeah, they will run an audit of the business.
Wow.
Even
yes.
if the employee doesn't have the right to drop the claim, the Department of Employment Security can still audit you. And they will do so.
Wow. So just an employer, a former employer, well, actually, a former independent contractor innocently filing for unemployment because they thought they were entitled to it could ultimately lead to a trigger an investigation on your small business.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's usually very innocent and was unintentional. But yes, the other time that I also see is competitors turning you in if they think that you're using contractors to your advantage. We've gone through that with a number of clients where a competitor called and right or wrong, just to trigger the audit, just to trigger, you know, I see that in Department of Labor and I see that in Department of Employment Security coming from your competitors.
Yeah, it's interesting.
You should be aware.
Yeah, for sure. Especially at a time when, look, Chicago has done a lot over the last few years to try and make it more lucrative for employees. I'm not making a value statement or not, but with a mandatory PTO in the state and even more so mm-hmm. in the city, I know that there's been a feeling that some places want to maybe go more independent contractor to not give some of those benefits, you could say. But if you skirt those rules and it comes back, you're going to pay for it way more than the couple of hours of PTO you may have had to give an employee. You know, I don't know if that's all exactly right, but that seems right to me.
Right. It is really challenging in Illinois to have an employee for a variety of reasons, and what you're talking about is one of them. But what I, you know, if you go from no employees to one employee, there's no safe harbor with in the state of Illinois to say, you know, you're expected to know all the employment laws, and we're one of the more complicated states in the entire nation. And I usually say California, New York, and Illinois are the toughest states that I see to do business in as an employer. And yeah. So, you know, you're expected to know everything that I know. Everything that an HR professional knows as soon as you have one employee. There's no grace period. There's no warning time. So a lot of people like to start out with independent contractors, and then they get into this loop of, wait a second, are they really an independent contractor? But on top of the new laws that are protecting employees, and there are many, there's also the new Freelance Worker Protection Act in Illinois, and that protects the contractors. And if you don't timely pay your contractor, they could be entitled to double what they were not paid on time.
Wow.
So yeah. We now have laws protecting the independent contractor for the first time. So it's a dangerous state to
mess around.
To meddle with and do guesswork. You really need to know what you're doing.
Right. And look, as someone who does independent contractor work as well here and there, I appreciate some of that stuff because I've worked for places that are done work for a place that does not then pay you on time. That's not fair. But also right. Now as an S Corp owner with one employee who is myself, Susan, I did have to get up to speed. I had to get workers' compensation from my right. employee, which is me.
For
so
yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. For yourself.
Right. So,
oh, by the way, you're not entitled to workers' comp.
I know. It's just kind of wild. But anyways, we go down the rabbit hole. We got about 3 minutes
exactly.
left. Susan, 773, someone, and this probably deserves more than 3 minutes, but just generally speaking, they wanted to let go an employee at the place that they own. They've got about 10 employees. They've been there for about 4 months or so. They've just heard of so many horror stories in corporate world of former employees suing employment because they weren't warned properly, that they weren't doing a good job. So it's a long text, but the 773 basically says, do I need to set up improvement plans like you see in corporate worlds to cover my, you could probably figure out what they said, or is it okay just to fire an employee that isn't really good? That's a loaded right. question, Susan, and you can navigate that how you want.
Yeah, it's a loaded question, It is the worst answer. I hate giving this answer, but it is definitely the typical lawyer, it depends answer. But really what it depends on is what is your practice in your office? What have you been doing before? Because if you have practice of providing performance improvement plans, and you have to apply that consistently and not in a discriminatory fashion. But if you've never had performance improvement plans, then you're not necessarily required to do so. There's no law that says you have to give some or performance improvement plan. Now, if you want to deny unemployment, that's a whole different story. I'm not going down that road today, but there's no law that says you have to. You just have to enforce your policies and practices in a non-discriminatory and consistent fashion. So it may be entirely possible that you can just get rid of them. It may also be, depending on the facts, to your advantage, because sometimes employees that feel like they're about to get fired have claims to file because they're trying to save their jobs, right? And it can make the situation more difficult, right? They've never raised an issue before or made a claim, and now they're on warning, and now they come back with, I don't know. I mean, people don't know what hostile work environment really is. I hear employees making claims all the time that they're in a hostile work environment, and they may not like their work environment, but it's not a quote-unquote hostile work environment, which is a legal term. So you just have to be careful, but unfortunately, that is a it-depends analysis. Run through with that for people, yeah.
I hear it depends on this program more than any other program on WGN. I can definitely assure you of that as a show with a bunch of lawyers. Susan, we got to run here in just a moment. You're a navigant in law. I got to get you on with Patrick Dolan sometime. He represents employees. He's done employers too.
Yeah.
He's a super nice guy. It'd be fun to have you guys kind of talk through employer-employee issues together, because he would take one side of it and you would take the other. Not that there's sides on it, but you know what I mean. It'd be a fascinating discussion to hear you two kind of chat through both sides of employee law. Really quickly, the 209 asked the exact question I was going to ask you, Susan. Are you like held on like a retainer for a business? Do you charge just by the hour for a business if they need you for services here or there? How does that work?
We don't require kind of a monthly retainer, if that's what you mean. And we actually have a subscription program for clients, for business owners, that involves unlimited quick calls and answers for a low monthly fee, which is very unusual and not anything I've really seen anywhere else from the employment law perspective. But from my philosophy, I want you to get ahead of the problem and not be afraid to call me. So it is really, truly a low monthly fee, and you get on the phone with me, and it's unlimited quick phone calls. If I can answer it off the top of my head, which I've been doing it for 25 years, so I can answer most questions off the top of my head. But if I can kind of answer off the top of my head in about 10 to 15 minutes, then that's included in the package, and you can call me as many times as you want. So that's something that we do, and we have a lot of clients that take advantage of that and call me quite frequently.
I love that. That's a great way to do it, I think. That really, I think, is the best way to help a small business who, you know, let's pay that fee every month, okay, but then I know that I can just really quickly call this person and get help there. Susan, we got to go. Navigant Law, you guys do great work. Thanks for hopping in. Go watch the rugby game, okay?
Okay, great. Thanks so much.